Okay, thank you. And it's good to be not having a microphone on my. I am Italian, and sometimes giving me a microphone's like muting me, but animated in such a way. So I thank you, Jimmy. I think I had a fleeting thought maybe a week or so ago where I thought maybe I shouldn't do this, but thank you for keeping my foot to the fire because it's been an incredibly interesting process. Highly recommend it. If you're thinking about perhaps presenting or giving us your story. So, as Jim mentioned, I am fairly new. I would say I looked at this group and I'm like, what is this? Like, what is this trudge? What are these guys? And to be quite honest, I looked everything up, overanalyzed everything. And I did all of this diligence and I'm like, okay, this seems like it's a interesting and something that I needed to do. So when I see walk slowly with heavy steps, I think that means a lot to me. And I'm kind of going in, you'll see as we go, like a little bit out of order in terms of like chronology, I guess. So what I've already experienced in the I guess several months that I've been coming to this group every day is I've read a lot, and this is a book that I highly recommend. But when I see this quote, when I think about it all the time, if I were to replace the AT equals Appalachian Trail, but if I replace that with AA and if I replace forest with sobriety, this quote really rings true for me. And it's something that is important because I understand that there are big cities and there's lots of places to go drink. Get it. But here, having like our group and having our sobriety is where the forest really is. Another thing that I've been learning and trying to continue to learn is this is another quote is knowing the enemy, we already know the enemy. Knowing yourself, meaning myself in this case, very difficult. And if you don't know yourself, you already know who the enemy is, but if you don't know yourself, what are you doing? And this group and other groups also like just help me with that. It's an everyday thing. So that doesn't go away. Now, gentlemen, I would buckle up because this is where the flight begins to get a little bumpy. So this is August of 23, give or take. And I had a like I was a drunk. And not only was I a drunk at that time, I got worse, which was incredibly hard to do. But I got a real case of the effets where I felt like I had been cut open all over my body and dropped into a piranha tank. And every single thing, every person, everybody was just this, that, the other. And I said, screw it. So this is a true story. I literally was sitting at my desk. I looked up, this is 100% true. I looked up, what is the happiest place on earth? Because it's certainly not where I was sitting. And I looked it up, and it didn't matter where it was, I was going. And it could have been El Paso, Texas. Wouldn't have mattered. It happened to be Helsinki, Finland. And I had been there before many times, well, at least two other times. And I giggled to myself. I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'm going. I pack a bag and I go. And not only did I pack a bag and go, I turned everything off. I put all my encryptions on. Nobody was going to find me, like pretty much. All electronics were off. All passwords were changed. Turned my phone off once I got to the airport. And I went from Dulles, Washington, Dulles. And I remember waking up. I guess sort of on the eastern side of the Atlantic. I had been drinking for 4 hours probably prior to the flight at the lounge. I wake up. I'm sure the person next to me was not entirely happy, but I went to the bathroom. I have always carried Visine and I always carried a toothbrush. So I go freshen up, so to speak, and grabbed a drink, came back to my seat, about 2 hours to get like sort of ready because I wasn't going to Finland right, like I was going to Finland, but I knew where I was stopping, and that was in Munich. And been to Munich many times. And I was getting freshened up because this was going to be my breakfast. And this is been there multiple times with that exact same order. That's Weißwurst. Great sausage, by the way. It's very different than you'd imagine. Couple of beers, couple of pretzels. That's like that was the breakfast of champions at the time. And again, my phone is off. The only way that people could find me likely would be maybe if the passport's getting tracked. But once you could say EU, I've learned this. Once you get into the EU, it doesn't matter where you go. It's kind of, they don't track your passport from that point forward. So as far as I know, people knew I maybe got to Germany. That's probably it. So I fly 4,300 miles, give or take. Everything's off. I'm wasted. And I get to my hotel. I'm going to Helsinki. Great, right? And I giggle to myself when I see this. This is actually the hallway. And if you look at this picture pretty quickly, I giggled to myself also at this. It kind of looks like a morgue. And I had only booked a one-way ticket. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was just going to bounce around. I literally had no plan aside from sitting in my sorrow, feeling sorry for myself, I suppose. And so I flew 4,300 miles to see this. And like, okay, if you wanted to see Finland, great. I didn't really see it. Like that's a picture of Helsinki. It's a wonderful city, great people, it's really nice and all the things. Here's another one. I didn't take these because I barely saw it. Because what I did is I sat in that hotel room in the dark, didn't even turn the TV on. I was just drinking at all times of day, didn't matter. Didn't even know what time it was, body clock aside. And what I did, and I participated in this, and this is an actual word, and it's an actual thing in Finland, and you'll learn something new today, perhaps. It's called Kalsari Kenit. I'm not pronouncing it right, but it's as best I can do. But this is true. This is a thing. People in Finland, they will say they're not going out, they're doing this. And they literally sit around in their bedroom or their house or wherever in their underwear, drinking all day, all morning, whatever time of day, doesn't matter. That's what I did. And I didn't, I mean, I went to Estonia, I went to Sweden, like it doesn't matter. I was not in a of sound mind. And also every single morning, if I happened to leave the place, I was hoping that there would be, a friend, a loved one, somebody perhaps found me or was just like waiting for me to come down to the lobby or what have you. But I did just a good enough job of making that impossible that it never happened. So I didn't even really turn anything back on, to be honest. So I was doing a very good job of like running and hiding. And I didn't know how to even communicate with anyone at that point either. So I just still had the case of the efforts and I went. Now, I did eventually come back, obviously, to the United States. I flew back from Helsinki. I decided, I'm like, all right, enough's enough, sort of. I still had a firm case of the efforts. I had two failed marriages. I was an absent father, an absent husband. The only thing that mattered to me was the drink. And so I came back. I spent a couple days with my buddy who lives in Chicago. I went to another couple other buddies' places around the East Coast. Then I get back to my place. At the time, I lived in Northern Virginia, and I still had a case of the efforts. Like that didn't go away. I wish, obviously everybody has wishes they could go back in time and do certain things a different way. That was the time where somebody should have tackled me and taken me to a meeting. Absolutely should have done. And I can't blame anybody except for, aside from myself on that. Because I get back, let's just say it's September, late September of that year. I still have the case of the efforts, like I said. And then all of a sudden, that word, Kalsari Kenit, which I had to learn is a verb, it became several months later, I had to learn a new word. And that's called commissary. So I ended up having to go to jail because of a protective order, like sort of a, I'll spare you the details. It was a like a an issue with a protective order where I didn't disclose everything, and next thing I know, I'm in jail. Now, mind you, I had never seen the inside of a police car since I was in, I don't know, eighth grade civics class or something. Never. I was like, this is not real. This cannot be real. Like, am I getting punked? But I was drunk at court. And it was a spiral that was happening. And so I'm like, okay, this will be like, what, is this an hour? And the guy's like, no. No. I'm like, is it like do I like no, it's gonna be more than a night. And I went more than 2 nights. And I'm in jail. I have never seen that side of it aside from watching Dateline or 2020. And that's me. I'm in like a jumpsuit. And then I get into a like unit. Things that I never really knew existed. Well, I knew sort of kind of. So, mind you, a handful of months prior to that, I was one doing slides for a board report for a Fortune 100 company. And then what ends up happening is I am now the same person. I'm playing what I would perceive as a high stakes game of spades all the time. And when I say high stakes, I mean for ramen noodles and Snickers bars. Okay. It was to the point where, and I had never really played spades before, but I sort of figured it out enough and seemingly was fine at it because it got to the point where, I mean, this is how you, I suppose, how you sort of mentally compartmentalize things. And we had a guy who would watch our games to make sure that if there happened to be Latino guys playing, they were not allowed to speak Spanish at the table. I'm like, I sort of kind of speak Spanish, but not enough. But he's like, no, because they can signal. I'm like, oh, okay, we're playing for a Snickers bar. But anyway, I will save you the crass comments that these guys made, but they called me this mega mind, big multiple swear words in between. I was like, what the hell does that mean? And the detail is this, like I sort of thought about it, but I'm like, I looked it up when I left, obviously. And this is what freaking, I'm like, super rude, but also made me laugh when I got out because also when you're inside that type of environment, which you've never been in, fish out of water completely, and you obviously are not drinking, I had like a blackout. So that section of my life, I only remember glimpses of. And it like I could only I would equate it similarly to what a blackout is like. It truly I simply remember glimpses, and that was that. It was very much Groundhog Day. So I get out fine, and I still had a case of the effets. I still started drinking the second I got out, and I said, "All right, now I'm gonna sell everything." I sold my house. I did a like an estate sale. I mean, people were coming through, and when you do an estate sale, I was thinking I'm just going to sell a couch or two. No. The estate sale people come in, they're like, everything has a tag on it, everything. I'm like, Lakers say whatever, take it. Don't it. So I literally sold everything, and I didn't care. Didn't care. It was the least of my concerns. As long as I was able to drink, nothing else mattered really. So then as I've been in this program and as I've really been doing this introspection, I would say like I'm trying to figure out like where did this all start? Where is the root, if there is one? And this is where, in my opinion, where I became unhinged, and it was allowed to be. I was allowed to be unhinged, and this was simply like when I got to school, right? When I went to college, that's when you had no parental supervision. This is when you were able to just be an adult. I did fine in school, but I made sure, I never stopped the drink. In fact, that's where it became one, it just became normalized. Everybody was. And I still, even at that time, kind of knew, I'm like, I don't think I should be drinking at 11 a.m. on a Saturday. But that's what happened. And then that just continued and continued and continued. Now, I became like, as soon as I got out of school, I became like just corporate America guy. Got worse because it's also part of corporate America. And I did very well, give or take, like whatever that means to you. And I still was like, okay, so every event, there's a happy hour. Every quarterly business meeting, there's a dinner and a happy hour, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like this was normal. And I mentioned earlier, I became an absent husband. I became an absent father. All I wanted to do was travel. All I wanted to do is, can I get on that meeting? Can I go to, that's all I wanted to do. And I still always had this fleeting thought that I wasn't good enough. And drinking was never, ever part of the equation where I thought that that was the problem. It was me that was the problem. I was like, I should be getting this particular role or whatever. It was to the point where I was like literally sitting on the commode one morning and I thought to myself, because you've heard about imposter syndrome, I didn't even think I was good enough to be an imposter. I was like, not good enough. Nothing is good enough. And therefore, like the drinking was just probably making that fire go in a bad way. So I had the amount of self-doubt, even though I was seemingly doing great from the outside, to me inside, I felt like terrible. And I will do, and I do remember this, and I was in Vegas. Forget the exact year, doesn't matter. But I'm already a drunk and I didn't even admit that I was, but I knew. Right. I knew probably for the last 20 years that I should have been in meetings. And I was sitting at dinner. One of our vendors bought an absurdly expensive bottle of wine. At the time, I was kind of like a beer and a shot guy, meaning like multiple shots and multiple beers, but wasn't sophisticated, if you will. And these guys bought this absurd bottle. It was something else. So it was called Chateau Lafite. It's one of the big five Bordeaux's. This is their actual vineyard. This is Transylvania to me. That like I really wish I would have taken the swine flu if I could have missed that trip, because I ended up getting like the wine flu for 20 years. This place and all the places that look like it are actually like where Dracula lives for me. But it felt like, whoa, this is incredible. Not only am I already a drunk, this is now I'm more sophisticated. Now I'm a wine guy. And when I had that first sip of that wine, this is what it was like. And it is not a good thing. Not a good thing at all. All I thought about from that point forward was wine. So I'm like, I don't drink beer. I drink wine. I don't drink whiskey. I don't drink bourbon. I actually don't know anything about them, but I know everything about wine. And that was an experience that changed my life, changed many people's lives. And I couldn't stop. Couldn't stop. To this day, even if I think about it, I know it'll turn my, I think about it, it turns my stomach. It really does. I know, like, I think Bobby Z always says, like, praying to the American standard every morning. That wasn't anything that I experienced every day, but I had. And when you it's really, how do you not realize you have an issue when you're doing that and you can't tell if it's red wine or if it's blood? And that I was like, yeah, it's probably red wine. Don't know. And so I'm still peeling back the onion. This exercise has helped me a lot also in that I'm like, I understand where the root is. And it was because once upon a time, when I was probably 14, that's roughly when my first drink was. You know, this is a great quote by Mike Tyson. Not that he's the most prolific person to quote, but this is true. And I was a regular kid with regular sisters. Like here's a picture of me in the past. I did have hair once upon a time. Ironically, any picture you have is in the past. So But we were like the idyllic, simple, normal American family. And sort of, it was actually 33 years ago this past Tuesday, my dad passed unexpectedly, heart issue. He was younger than I was at the time. And it literally ripped everything apart. And I didn't know how to deal with that. I didn't know what to do. My mom didn't know what to do. My sisters clearly didn't. They're younger than I am. There was no playbook at all. And when I had that first drink, which was after he had passed, I felt like this is where it is. This is how everything is fixed. And it's not the case. So, yeah, that's 33 years ago. And I still struggle with it every day. And my sisters, I'm sure, do. We don't even really talk about it. And that's the way it is, the way it always has been. And that root cause, if you will, and you can't blame anybody. I can't blame anyone. It just happened. And then the decisions that I made from that point forward, while seemingly some of them were fine, some of them were not fine, it all sort of goes back to me to that part. So, and this is, I think, for all of us, and this is something that I absolutely did not do. You know, if you read this really quickly, today I take the blue pill every day. When I wake up and I see my own ceiling fan, I feel great. I'm not hungover. Everything that is, I'm in like I have 2 feet under me. That is good. I took that red pill when I was 14 every day. Like, let's see how far it goes. Like, I have a case of the efforts. Like, all right, whatever. But the blue pill today is what I do every day. And I really appreciate everyone on this meeting and others for keeping that, like, reinvigorating it every day. Because if I don't come to a meeting, let's just say I didn't come to a meeting for 2 days or 3 days, I would feel terrible. Terrible. So it's important, and I really appreciate everyone for listening. And I will get back to this again, because while I was a skeptic when I first came to this meeting in particular, we live in harsh conditions, whether we like it or not. And the way I'm viewing life is the windshield's bigger than the back window. If it's not, you're probably driving in the wrong direction. But there's always that friendly reminder on the side view that the objects are closer than they appear. And that's in the back. And that is 100% true, even as a metaphor. For me, that is 100% true. It's very close behind you, very close behind me. It wouldn't take much, but it also would take a lot at the same time. So I really, really appreciate everyone taking time on Sunday and letting me speak. And while not quoting John H. specifically, let's peace be with all. Have a great new year. Let's enjoy 2026. Thank you very much.